Greetings. You are now listening to the McAfee Croncast. Stand by for your hosts, Brian Murphy and Doug Bruzzoni. They will be discussing your favorite baseball squadron, the San Francisco Giants. Take it away, Brian and Doug.
Welcome. It's the final McAfee Croncast ever? Maybe. I don't know. But joining me is joining me and Doug. Doug, hi.
Hi.
Joining us is Grant Brisby, who you may know from SB Nation and previously of this podcast, and of course, McAfee Chronicles. Grant, welcome to your podcast that you created.
You might know me from such memorable posts as the time I embedded a John Morosi tweet and pretended it was content.
Do you think that was the inspiration for Trill Ballin's musical replays of Darren Revelle tweets? Like an inspiration for those?
No. Probably not, but those are really funny.
They really are.
You can't really translate it to a podcast format, but look those up. Musical variations of Darren Revelle tweets. They're fantastic.
I have Darren Revelle blocked, so it's bliss in that sense, but I guess you are missing out on that. Anyway, the San Francisco Giants, that's what we're here to talk about. They were eliminated from existence about 5 weeks ago now. And they head into the offseason, you know, they're aiming for their 84 wins and then get lucky and go from there. But there's been some interesting news, gold gloves and gold gloves and favorite players not returning. I think we've had two podcasts since this happened, but I think even though we wrote about it on the site, let's take a minute to talk about how Gregor Blanco is gone.
He was a very, very nice security blanket to have for many years. Well, I mean, he was terrible last year, but he gave the Giants so much more than they ever could have hoped. And it's players like him who make other teams hate the Giants, and I love it.
Defense, left-handed hitting and on-base percentage, and basically for free off the scrap heap.
Yeah, and he won two World Series. Like, he was a starting outfielder for two different World Series.
He wasn't just a starting outfielder. He was kind of like this guy kind of starting outfielder. It was like that. That's the best part is that like Melky Cabrera was like the reason the Giants were going to win the World Series. He was so good. And turns out he was just juiced to the gills and then they suspended him. And I thought, I mean, didn't they suspend him after the Dodgers swept the Giants? Like, wasn't there just kind of like a 1-2 punch where you kind of got hit in the privates with Giants?
No, I don't think it was right after. If I'm remembering right, it was after a 7-2 win. That was the only time the Giants had their full lineup because somebody came back from injury. Maybe, I don't remember exactly who. And then they had their full lineup for one day and then Cabrera was gone.
That's right. That's right. And that's when I realized the Giants would never, ever win another World Series. But Blanco was the guy. Blanco filled in and he's, you know, like he's hitting triples and stuff in the World Series. Like he was a fun player to watch, except for last year.
Oh, man. I mean, he probably killed more rallies than timely, you know, timely pop culture reference, but essentially he couldn't hit a sack fly. He used to, for me, it was always sort of like, I don't remember him. I'm sure you're going to be able to pull up the stats right away. I don't remember him being such a ground ball machine, but last year he really was. And he couldn't advance runner. Like he couldn't do anything even with his outs making, which used to be one of his useful skills. Like, oh, need a sack fly. He could actually do that. Move the runner along. He could actually do that. I don't even think last year he even did that cool trick where he'd kind of yank the ball or kind of flare it over the third baseman's head, get that running start out of the box. He just looked inert, really bad.
I mean, you remember at the end of April, he was hitting like 350. He was like, again, once again, he's the world's best fourth outfielder, and we're all just spoiled. And, you know, I want to say, like, close to the All-Star break, He was hitting sort of league average, or, you know, at some, he was okay for a while, and then he was so bad over the last couple of months. I'm looking at it right now. He was 2 for his last 25, and I don't remember those two.
Well, he got hurt in May sometime, and he just kept playing through it. Like, the Giants didn't have other outfielders, and Bruce Bochy was like, "Yeah, this is fine. If only I don't have an internet comment, you know, comic to reference here that would get that point across of like a dog somewhere saying something was fine." But Bruce Bochy was just, "This is fine."
As long as we're on the internet memes, from July 1st on, he had 69 at bats.
Nice.
I hated them. I hated them all. They were not nice.
11 for 69.
Did he start the triple play?
Probably. I mean, just go. Just
no,
go.
No. The triple play must have been hit well. So it couldn't have been him.
Man.
I'm looking that up right now. I'm glad that we've basically... Oh, it was Brandon Crawford hitting into the triple play. That does make it... That is why it was pretty awful all the way around. but I think there was a point in that game where... I think it was the previous inning, maybe, where Blanco screwed up or something anyway, too. But, yeah, but we're talking all the bad stuff. Everyone's just going to hone in on the fact that he made that catch to preserve the perfect game, which really is spectacular, and probably out of the Giants in the 21st century, he was probably the only outfielder who could have made that catch. Did they have any other, besides Barry Bonds, did they have any other outfielders who were left-handed in the field? I'm trying to think. And I think that's the only reason why he was able to make that catch, because he had the glove on his right hand.
Yeah, I think you've just inadvertently made me realize that I have no idea which outfielders catch with which hand.
Like, no, yeah. I just thought, Nate Sherwald? No.
I'm very aware of what handedness players are, and if they put batting gloves on their damn hands.
That's, you know, when I was in college, one of my friends was like, "Yeah, blah, blah, blah," and he's married. And I said, "How do you know he's married?" And he says, "Well, he wears a ring." And like, it blew my mind. Like, wait, you can check that? Like, what? Like, I just had these blinds. I'm an idiot when it comes to things like that. Now I'm looking back and going, like, I have no idea who throws with what hand and that stuff. So thanks, guys.
You're welcome. That was an Arrested Development joke, too, where Heather Graham was Michael Cera's substitute teacher, and he says to no one in particular, he just says out loud, softly, "No ring."
Well, then later in that episode, when Jason Bateman meets her, he does the same thing, goes, "Oh, no ring." So, call back.
I forgot about that. Very good. So, you know, Gregor Blanco, I think he's worth talking about, because until this year, when we hated all the Giants and the entire team and everything they stood for, he was not just a good Giant, he was a remarkable Giant because of all the things we've mentioned. And when certain players go, I think we're relieved, like, oh, it's good that Javier Lopez is going to hang him up because he was bad. But, you know, it was time. But at the same time with Blanco, he's like 32 and, you know, he's a fun guy. And it's just kind of weird that it just one day he's just not a useful player anymore. You know, Lopez is 37, you know, and he did one thing and he never really, you know, he relied on location and he lost his location. That's what happens with pitchers. All their stuff ends in tears and usually quickly as well. But Blanco, that backup thing, he just stopped even being a viable backup. And I think that's the hardest part. Like, he just stopped being useful altogether.
I think he can still be that player for another team next year. Like, I'm not necessarily ready to bury him alive, but he was just going to be just that much too expensive for the Giants to take a risk on him being that bad again. So it's you got to remember the good times and just how good he was and how kind of emblematic he was of the Giants just finding money in coats they haven't worn in a while and just seeming like the luckiest idiots in the world. And that's oversimplifying it, because they scouted Blanco. They got him for a reason. They fixed him. But it still looks like he's just a complete find for a team that maybe wasn't expecting him.
Anyway, Yeah, so, I mean, let's talk about another thing that the Giants haven't had in a while, and that's the they win three Gold Gloves for the first time since 1994. Brandon Crawford, I feel like he's getting this in just under the wire. He wins, he continues to be the, you know, excellent shortstop in the National League. And I feel like the arrival of Corey Seager kind of spells the end of Brandon Crawford being talked about. At least it felt that way in stretches this year. But, you know, Brandon Crawford, we all know he's one of the best, really is one of the best. And Buster Posey, we know, is the best. And he won a Gold Glove. And then the surprise of surprises, and I think it's really just tied to 2014 for some reason, Joe Panik won the Gold Glove. So...
I wasn't expecting that. I don't think Joe Panik was expecting that, or his immediate family.
I feel like it makes it a lot easier for the Giants to get Andrew Miller from the Yankees now, though, trading Joe Panik now that he has a Gold Glove. That all still makes sense, right?
So. Yeah, just mail that back in time, and the Giants are, you know, even year.
Tug the collar. But, you know, I think we want to talk about Buster Posey here, because Buster Posey did not have the main cog of the offense type of season, despite being the main cog of the offense. But start to finish, he was clearly the best catcher in the National League and probably the best catcher in baseball. And when you watch other guys, like watching the Cubs play through these playoffs, it was a little embarrassing how they stole strikes. There was nothing subtle about what quote-unquote pitch framing is these days. And I think Buster Posey actually does have a little bit of artistry to him than pretty much all the other catchers, even the ones you might say are really good at it as well. But he's really impressive, and he was clearly hurt, but so that hurt his bat. But, you know, defensively, you're not going to find anyone better. And I'm glad to see that that's now just the norm for baseball.
Yeah, I don't think he's necessarily the best at blocking pitches, and that's sort of one of the things that you can judge as a fan from home is how catchers get in front of the ball. And there's not like a lot of defensive statistics you can glom onto for catchers. So for a while, I think Posey was just sort of average. You know, he's not terrible at blocking balls in the dirt or anything like that. And he had to catch Lincecum and Jonathan Sanchez, who maybe made it look a little bit worse than he was. But now you've got the pitch framing statistics, and they're variable. They go up and down. They're all over the place for most catchers, but Posey's at the top or near the top every single year, and it kind of jives with what you're watching, just how the subtle artistry, like you were saying. He's outstanding, and the one piece that was missing was the gaudy caught stealing percentage, and he had that this year, so it was the full package. And I think when you go on the Sabre site and they have that defensive statistic, this kind of aggregate stat that they base a lot of the awards on now, he's three times as valuable as the next closest catcher. Like, he just blows Grandal out of the way. Yadier Molina's, you know, almost toward the bottom, and Posey's like at the top, just like dominating the rest of the catching world.
And, you know, to be clear, Yasmani Grandal and Yadier Molina are fantastic catchers. So again, to put in perspective, if anyone's wondering, like, Buster Posey is still head and shoulders above two outstanding defensive catchers. And it was probably, you know, the Giants have a lot of stabilizing things on their roster that are just good. Like, they have good bones, essentially. Right. So whatever they wind up building around those things, they're excellent starting points.
That's going to make it so much more painful when they sign Jose Bautista for 4 years.
Oh, I guess we can transition into that. But I did want to remark that did Joe Panik seemingly... did he really stand out this year defensively? That, I mean, I probably watched all the... I mean, I watched too many games this year. But it's entirely possible that I did not watch Joe Panik closely enough.
It was... a big part of it was the statistical component. The Sabre stat defensive index or whatever, that's a part of the Gold Gloves now. I think it's a third. He was the best second baseman in the National League according to that. And if you get, you know, a couple of, I don't even know who votes for the Gold Gloves anymore. And it's like part managers, coaches, right? Like, it's a consortium, right?
Right.
And so if they see, you know, Panic make a play while they're in town, I mean, it kind of skews their perspective. I mean, I thought it was DJ LeMahieu. Every time the Giants hit a stupid ball in that stupid infield against the Rockies, it's like Arenado or Trevor Story making a great play or LeMahieu. I hate them all. Like, they're just all so good. So I kind of wrote it off and thought it was LeMahieu's. I mean, he won the batting title. How can you not win a gold glove? He won the batting title.
They are 1-1.
No, he hit well enough to win it. So yeah, you would think.
Was definitely surprised, but I think it's the stats that really got Panic over.
And I think Matt Duffy still rates very highly on those same sort of defensive measures as well for third base. So it would have been interesting to see if he's there. But, you know, I don't think if Nunez is staying at third base, I think the Giants, the whole infield is going to be as good as it was expected to be heading into last year and how good it's been very recently. I think Nunez is a fine third baseman. And hey, Joe Panic, statistically, fantastic as well. So great bones that the Giants have to kind of go through offensively. I think we all knew that they had...
Wait. Okay. I just remembered something real quick while we're talking about Buster Posey and Yasmani Grandal. I just wanted to take a quick moment before we segued to laugh at the Padres for trading away Yasmani Grandal, to division rival, for a garbage DH who didn't work out for them, and now he's gone. And he's like a 27-year-old switch-hitting catcher. Like, great job, idiots.
I'm all for
the Padres brand is just on point.
That's just amazing. Just, oh, my goodness. Okay, segue.
I think the good bones we're talking about, all the Giants have, we went into last year, remember, being like, the Giants have a good offense. That's going to be a productive offense. And for the most part, it was, and this is the article that I still haven't finished, but essentially, not in the second half of the season. They were averaging about 4.5 runs in the first half and about 4 runs in the second half, which, hey, it's pretty good. I think I have the numbers wrong. In any case, they dropped half a run and from the first half to the second half for whatever reason. And you look at the bullpen usage and what needs to happen late in games. You need to score runs just as much as you need to protect leads, I would think. You need to add on where you can. And so I guess my question for this article, but really to the panel, is, you know, you talk about Jose Bautista. Don't you think one of the best ways the Giants can improve their bullpen is by improving their offense and looking for one opportunity, which they might be able to better afford than whatever the reliever market's turned into, finding that guy, finding that one-year deal that they are so good at doing to fix one of their offensive issues? But I say that going, I still think Mack Williamson is worth starting the year with. So then if that was the case, there's not really a lot you can do to change the lineup. So I guess I've talked myself into, what are the Giants going to do about the offense?
No, I think it was unfair to ask Casilla to hold so many one-run leads, and that adding on, because it seemed like if the Giants had a one-run lead, that's when Casilla would give up a run like an idiot. No, but I mean, it's like it seemed like it was unfair to ask him to keep doing that over and over again. And I think that's totally right. You fix the lineup to give them those kind of add-on, tack-on runs that give the bullpen a cushion. And I do think there's something to be said about the way a bullpen can spiral together. And when things are going bad for one guy, everyone else kind of clenches up a little bit more, and it's kind of a death spiral. And I think more runs would help that. I think more runs would stop that before it starts, and Casilla gives up a run, and Teehee, it's no big deal because we got 2 runs in the top of the ninth. So I do think there's something to that.
You know, I would think that, but then I remember the Baltimore game, and I'm like, no. No.
That game sucked. No,
they tried.
Oh, that game sucked.
Well, in the aggregate of a whole season or a half season or whatever, what have you, even if the bullpen was exactly as bad as it was last year, because the whole thing is they can't be any worse. So let's just say they're exactly as bad as they were last year. Even if that's the case, a slightly better offense. I was going to say a way better, just a slightly better offense. Maybe maybe that September is not quite as disastrous as it was, and maybe that game against the Cubs doesn't quite turn out the way it is just by having the potential. But I mean, how many times did the three of us, not to mention the rest of Giants Twitter, how many of us made the joke that, like, oh, the Giants are down by a run, they just need five singles to take the lead? And that's basically what the offense is. As fine as that can be over a full season, there are times when it'd be nice, when it'd be like, you know, that was the utility of Michael Morse. You know, he'll crush a mistake, and the best the Giants can do is hit a hard single up the middle on a mistake for the most part.
There's a part of me that I know logically what Mark Trumbo and left means. Like, I get it. Like, he's not good out there. He's been tried. He's not a National League player. It's a disaster, but I want to see that kind of hitter just in the middle of the lineup, just to, like, 40 times a year, just boom, don't worry about hitting another single. I've got this. I'm just going to hit it over the fence. And I want to know how that plays sort of sequentially with all the singles, occasional doubles hitters that the Giants have. I want to see how it affects the flow.
Yeah. So that's kind of my pitch. But again, it kind of gets back to, I really think Mack Williamson, I mean, I know Bochy's just going to play a straight platoon if they wind up not getting a free agent. It'll be Williamson and Parker, which is pretty absurd considering that Mack Williamson has a reverse career platoon split, but whatever.
No one pays attention to that, nerdlinger.
Except that they do, and it helps them lose somehow this year. I don't know. You know, I just think it's kind of that weird situation where I do want the Giants to try to get a bat, but at the same time, I'm like, well, they're actually in the position now where they somehow, we talked about this with Roger, gasp and surprise, the Giants are actually better at developing position players right now. Yeah. And that is where their strength. So I would hate for them to kind of ignore that on the outfield. They certainly aren't on the infield. So an interesting dilemma, but I would agree that Jose Bautista for 4 years is a bad deal, but a right-handed power hitter is a good idea for AT&T Park.
Yeah, and I think so too. But real quick, the homegrown player with the two homegrown players with the highest slugging percentage last year. Can you name them?
Mack Williamson's got to be one.
Well, it can't be Buster Posey. I don't think Buster Posey slugged over 300. I'm kidding. Brandon Crawford.
It's Brandon Belt.
Oh, Belt. Belt was the best hitter. Belt, yeah.
Belt. And Connor Gillespie.
Well, yeah.
440 slugging percentage. Trick question. Oh, I'm so cute. No, but yeah, they need more power.
No more batting gloves, right? That's also the key. I can't believe Connor Gillespie was one of the best hitters in baseball with 95 miles an hour plus.
Yeah, he's full of surprises.
What happens is those batting gloves just slow you down.
That's right.
It's aerodynamics.
It's physics, you fools. It's physics.
It's also funny that he can hit a ball that's three times faster than how hard he can throw a ball across the diamond.
Oh, that's good.
So we look back at the season repeatedly. I don't think it's totally worth getting into it anymore, but going into next year, another part of to consider is I was asked by, I think, one of the Baseball Prospectus writers, you know, what's the deal? Why do the Giants reliever stats actually look pretty good, but why are they so bad as a unit? And I said, listen, once we start getting into numbers, unfortunately, I'm even dumber than when we're just doing verbal stuff. verbal stuff being a key word, a key telling phrase there. But basically, you know, Bochy did not trust his bullpen. And so Doug said this many times, like, he didn't give the guys a chance to fail and essentially work through their problems. And I guess I think he had the quick hook because Bochy really got into the whole matchups thing, which is a funny kind of double-edged sword of advanced statistics. I'm like, I'll just play the matchups every time, and I know I can get these micro splits and figure it out and figure out what I need to do. Oh, I've got this type of hitter coming up next. I'll bring in this type of pitcher, etc. My question is, do we think that there's going to be some sort of reining in of that next year? Because you can't imagine that the bullpen's going to change too much. Maybe one, or maybe at most two new guys in there. But the main guys that who are staying behind, you have to figure they're going to be counted on to fill the same or greater roles than they had last year. And so I guess the question is it worth playing the same type of game with them?
Well, I think they're going to lose, Romo, and he had some pretty heavy splits against left-handers. I guess not too much last year, but you didn't trust him against left-handers. And you're going to lose Lopez, who you just could not play against right-handed hitters. You maybe hope that Strickland figures it out against lefties a little bit. But I think the biggest thing he can do is sort of remember that Will Smith can get right-handers out. I think he really started to use him like a loogie when he was sort of the heir apparent to Jeremy Affeldt, where you could use him for a full inning, use him for the full seventh or eighth. And I'm not entirely sure why Bochy didn't like doing that in close games where the Giants were up. Like, you would see Smith pitch a complete inning in games where the Giants were down or they needed some mop-up work. But I think having pitchers like that who you don't have to coddle, don't have to baby, more Derek Laws, fewer Sergio Romos, I think will help out a ton.
And Casilla too. I mean, he wasn't used as a platoon guy because he was a closer, but he was awful against lefties and has been for a couple of years now. So hopefully not having him around, although I don't know, maybe they'll re-sign him. They do like bringing guys back. But hopefully that'll help.
That would be rich.
I hadn't even considered that. Thank you for giving me a new nightmare. I don't even know. I think it's funny how relievers, the prices are going to go way up because of how they're going to be used or what they mean for teams. But I mean, I hope that there's like a majority of teams or executives remembering that these are relief pitchers.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, they are designed to fail.
Yeah, I still have Kenley Jansen dreams. I mean, I can't get over him just because I think he's the kind of guy you can really like overwork in the postseason, and that's the trend. And you guys know me, I'm big on trends. Just really hip to what's going on out there. And I think Jansen fits with that. I think he's
coolest
just,
guy we know. You are.
Yeah, that's what I am. It's weird because I look at the bullpen and it's like if you play a word association game with me, it's like Hunter Strickland, pretty good. Like Derek Law, really good. Steve Nokert, like his potential. Will Smith, pretty good. Like, I don't hate this bullpen. Like, it's the weirdest dichotomy where it's just like usually when you've got bad guys, it's like Jim Poole and you're blah, and you start like barfing, like literally physically barfing up like you're given castor oil. This isn't that bullpen, and that's what gives me a little hope. But it also makes me think that I might be stupid.
Well, we're all stupid, Grant. Yeah,
we are all incredibly stupid.
Yeah, fair enough. Right? So I could see slapping on one, Mark Melanson and coming back with mostly the same bullpen and then actually working out just for some reason. Like Brad Ziegler, just slap him on the bullpen. And then the Giants come back and they're like not a great dominant bullpen, but okay, a pretty good bullpen all said and done, which it seems like it should take a lot more work than it probably will.
Oh, yeah. I think isn't that usually the case with baseball? I mean, I remark at how many teams plan for like 3 or 4 years down the line, and it's basically like 2 years later. They're up and running, essentially. We're all stupid. We really are. So I guess, does this season go down as like, are one of our most hated seasons of Giants baseball, 2016.
Yeah, I'm about to write the baseball prospectus essay for the book in like a couple hours. I'm going to start it. It's due tonight. Anyways, but but that's kind
of that's a lot of time you're giving yourself, Grant.
that's like the theme is, should I hate this season viscerally, or were there like good moments? Do I remember the times that we had, the brilliant times? I mean, there were moments. There was, you know, when Bumgarner pitched the complete game, the shutout against the Diamondbacks to close out the first half, like, that counts still. Like, I loved that team back there. And there were enough moments sprinkled in. I loved that comeback against Aroldis Chapman with Connor Gillespie. That made me feel alive, you know, like it was so fun. And the wild card game against Syndergaard, and like, that's one of the best pitched games on both sides and almost in postseason history. It's like, it was like a Morris Smoltz kind of thing. Like, how much weight do you give that? Because that stuff was fun. Then there's just the other stuff, which was garbage, and I hated it. And I really hated writing about the Giants a lot this year, a lot more than I've ever hated writing about the Giants.
And isn't it, I mean, one of those strangest things about the season is that Angel Pagan did not have a great season, but he somehow played the entire season and was not bad enough to be pointed out as like, God damn it, be better.
there was a real fine line that he threaded. It was pretty impressive. I mean, it was, you know, he was okay. He was, for a while
he was
there.
He was barely like, okay.
For a while there, he was like their best hitter, though. He was
yes.
Like, you know, 300 at some point in the way later than you might think. And then you're like, well, this guy's actually kind of good. And then he would, you know, eat his own shoelaces in the outfield. And you'd be like, oh, this guy's how were you a center fielder last year? You were terrible in the outfield. Like, he was like sub Ishikawa sometimes in the outfield.
Yeah, I can't fathom it because he seems to have all the tools of a baseball player and yet exhibits them about 42% of the time.
we like watched him play like a pretty good center field in 2012. Like, he was, yeah, like it worked. It made sense. He was out there in center and he should have been in center. And to see that in 5 short years later, just completely untenable as a left fielder in a left field that's fairly easy to play. It was shocking.
Yeah. I mean, Michael Morse and Travis Ishikawa played out there.
Pat Burrell. It's like the Giants have a tradition of trash defensive left fielders. Well, you know, going back to like Pedro Feliz for a season. I mean, they can stick people out there that make no sense. And you know, Pagan should have made sense. He's like ex-center fielder, can't handle center anymore. That's okay, buddy. We got your back. Just slide on over. And it was even weirder.
Denard Span, I mean, he was basically non-existent, except for a couple of signs that would make you not want to pull the plug on him. He was basically in a vegetative state for most of the season. He didn't. Maybe with their new base coach alignment, there will be more stolen bases, but we didn't see any speed. I mean, he took pitches sometimes. He did the bare minimum of being a leadoff hitter most of the time. Defensively, I would say unremarkable with occasional head scratching. But you know, the balanced out by those solid times. You know, you kind of go down this. I'm just talking about this year. I'm not trying to project into next year. You know, Hunter Pence, once he came back, it seemed like he was done. That's what it definitely how he played. Like, once he came back from his injury, it seemed like, oh, he's an old player and this is it. It's over. And then Brandon Belt was just like, hey, guys, I'm really good, but I'm not a 30 home run hitter. that's not happening. I just want to let you all know, I'm not doing that. And I will go on. I will go into a month long streak where I don't know what game I'm playing.
He's like, look, I gave you Splash 69, and Denard Span's like, I gave you Splash 70.
Yeah, I mean, when Belt made the All-Star team, it was like, finally, you know, he's an All-Star now. That's his level. You can't take that away from him, baseball.
But then he took it away from himself. He put himself in the timeout corner.
Yeah, he definitely has like I do not know where I shall put these cream pies, you know, like the French waiter, and like all of a sudden it's just covered in strikeouts.
A very Clouseau-esque baseball, but yes. Brandon Crawford, I think, was probably year to year, you know, it's like, oh, he's really good and he's just good now. Like, that's – I was fine. The idea that he would carry the offense sort of how he did in 2015 in stretches, you know, I don't think any of us expected that this year. And he didn't fall off a cliff in 2016. He was great. Joe Panik, seems like the jury's still out on him. That's – I guess he's one of the best defenders in the National League. There's that. But
officially,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, but beyond that, offensively, you know, I think the Giants are hoping that he's – that he does bounce back. And then, like I said, with Nunez or Gillespie, unless Gillespie's totally dislodged him there because of the hero moments, you know, I think Nunez started rough and kind of came on strong towards the end, and I think he'll be a nice hitter for them to have.
I think were you making a grand a point, or should I?
No, I was just going down the line. Please stop me and say, because I just reviewing the players for this year as to why we hate them. I'm like, well, I didn't hate Nunez. I didn't hate Crawford. Panik, I was like, oh, he might just be a utility guy offensively. Who knows?
I think that's where I was going to jump in, because I think Panik was legitimately unlucky this year, because everyone gets to point to batting average on balls in play like it's their pet stat whenever it's convenient, and it's ruined it for guys like Panik. But my eyeball test told me, man, this guy's getting hosed. Like, it seems like every time he'd hit a hard ball, it would find a glove. And you go to his batting average and balls in play, and it was like 240 or something like that, like 100 points below where it's been in the past. And so the stats there matched up the eyeball test. And so I'm bullish on Panik at least not being that bad again. I think he did hit into a lot of awful luck.
Did he hit it to DJ LeMahieu a lot?
Yeah, exactly. It was always like Arenado.
DJ LeMahieu was playing every game at every position when Panik hit it.
God, I hate those guys. Oh, I'm holding my nose like kid from Days Confused. Oh, damn it. Oh, I hate that guy.
Well, okay, and then just, you know, Buster Posey's played half of his career, and he's crossing into 30 now with the catching, and you know, has lingering issues, and it feels like the Giants, or he had lingering injury issues this year, and the Giants really couldn't afford to give him the time off or play him at first base a lot for whatever reason. And so that was interesting, but, you know, we can't hate Buster Posey, but I've said this before, I think it's probably not wise to rely on him as the center of the offense,
right,
as great as he is. And so that's kind of, to me, that's another reason why I hated this year. Because, man, isn't it just easier to be like, Buster Posey's the best player on the team. He's one of the best players in the entire sport. He's the center of the offense.
Yeah.
So I hated this year for making me go, no, 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 he cannot carry this team. They need help.
Right, right. I think that's fair. It was very convenient to just have your best hitter be a catcher. And just like it solves so much in one roster spot, just that guy is so much better than anybody else in the league at what he does. And now it's sort of like, well, he sort of hit like a Jonathan Lucroy. You know, it's like he's not in that rarefied air. And I think you're right. I think you can't rely on him to be the centerpiece of the offense. If he is your best slugger, your lineup probably isn't going to score as many runs as you like.
Well, that's exactly what we saw. And then the pitching, I think, it's pretty amazing in the history of baseball. Let's just take Giants, not specify the Giants, but how often does a team go out in the offseason and address very specific needs, and then their thing works out in the next season? It doesn't happen all the time. It's like, you know, there was famously that, you know, that Sports Illustrated cover of you can never have enough pitching, and the Yankees had like 7 or 8 all-star pitchers or something, and I think the season ended with 3 of them, right? or they're really bad the other half. And that's the one that immediately comes to mind. But essentially, the Giants had gaping holes in their rotation, and they plugged them in with 2 really solid guys. They got really good performance in 2 other spots, to the point where, you know, they had a really good starting pitching staff at the end of the year. And who you could have seen that coming if this goes as planned. But beyond that, you didn't you were not entirely sure it would go as planned, but it did.
Imagine
in June you weren't entirely sure that would go as planned.
That's true. That's a great point. Yeah.
There were some hiccups. I mean, that's for sure. But imagine like last offseason if the Giants signed Zach Greinke and then the next day came right back over the top with a big contract signing of Mike Leake. Like you would have been like, wow, the Giants, man, this rotation is a strength. And there's so many different permutations where they could have just soiled the bed and it would have been awful. And then they come out of it like, you know, they make a very painful trade that looks pretty forward thinking right now. And they're entering next year with the rotation as like the best part of the team. Like that's the part that should make you the most excited about the Giants is they've got a front four that looks like a legitimate postseason sort of front four.
And who knows about Ty Block, but as him in the back and Suarez as well, you feel like, oh, the Giants have five good starters. Like, just average it out. That's five arms. Every day you feel like the team's got a chance to win. It's not Jake Peavy back there where you're like, I hope he doesn't have give up eight runs in the first inning again.
If he can just get through five, giving up three runs, I think we're in good shape.
Right. Remember when he had like his first four starts, he had a two whip and a 10 ERA. And then we like found out that he had a bunch of money stolen from him. And then after that, he actually was okay for a stretch there. But it was just, I think that is a great point, Grant. And that actually takes the sting out of how much I hated 2016 because it set up 2017 so well. The next couple of years, except if, when they lose Cueto, that's going to be rough. But
that's going to stink. I mean, it's like you don't want to give a huge, stupid deal to a pitcher, any pitcher, but that's really going to stink because we're so fond of him now. Like he's so fun.
Yeah. Doug, do we have any Twitter questions this week?
We do. It was not a lot, but there were a few. Some of them were from like 2 weeks ago when we asked for them.
Well, people's attentions were distracted the last week or so.
That was not a complaint. Because this would have been a somehow worse podcast if we'd done it a week ago.
Well, what happened?
Leonard Cohen died.
Oh, man. Everybody knows that.
Oh, the future.
Leonard Cohen, human.
Apparently Monday Night Football is bad now. I don't know. Who watches football?
I really don't. I mean, I'm not doing it to be like a cool guy, but I don't watch football anymore, and I can't tell you how little I miss it.
I promise
no,
you,
the
last football game I watched from start to finish was the 49ers losing the Super Bowl, which to me was like a perfect, in my mind, series finale to football, because the 49ers losing the Super Bowl to me is like, okay, they're not the 49ers anymore, so football doesn't make any sense, so this is over.
That play should have like ended before the snap. Like it just would have been like the end of the Sopranos. Would have had to go through
like when he drops back, it just freeze frames and then fades out.
That's it. Yeah, just no fade to the end zone, or maybe he did throw it. I don't know. It's up to you, the viewer.
And then the sound of the crowd cheering slowly fades out too. Yeah, that's good. All right, Doug, what do we got?
Okay, so Samurai Panda at Hawkage Panda asked, if you had to match up Warriors players and Giants players in a best friends buddy system, who would you match with who?
Oh, man, that is good. You know, when the Warriors won, I shoehorned in some relevant content and tried to describe all the Warriors in Giants terms. And I can't remember exactly who was whom, but I think Draymond would teach Madison Bumgarner how to yell more effectively. And maybe there would be, you know, instead of just yelling at Puig, maybe take a swipe at his nuts. you know, there could be some sort of exchange of tactics. And I think Draymond and Bumgarner, they have the fury together. And I don't think you want to pair fury with repose. I think you need just pure fury to bounce off each other. So I'll go with that one.
It's a good one. Yeah, double down on the fury.
Yeah. Just be ticked off at the world.
I'll pick Brandon Belt and Clay Thompson. Let's pair the aloof talented people.
Oh, they are together. So both of them.
And they are both very specifically goofy. They even both look goofy. That's it. I'm just going to go with that. Also, incredibly talented and prone to streakiness. I think that pairs nicely.
Prone to being misunderstood, too.
Oh, and that, too, yeah.
I know Lopez is gone now, but I'm going to go with him and Andre Iguodala. I think they could have some really deep conversations just about life.
I can see that. They would just that's a podcast I'd listen to.
I also think Andre Iguodala would be a good Luki.
Yeah.
And I think he could do it. He's like, I've only got to pitch like for 5 minutes every 5 days. That's right. I can do that.
Yeah, I can hang with that. Yeah. Are there any, like, I feel like, all right, so who would the Cueto be? I mean, is there someone who's just taking pictures of horses and ball pits and loving life on the Warriors?
Yeah, is there anyone jovial and fun on the Warriors?
Jovial. I think Bogut used, you know, when he was on the Warriors, it seemed like he had a lot of fun making fun of social justice warriors in the podcast. Like, I think there was sort of a gleam in his eye when he wanted to rage against the matriarchy that we're all being oppressed by.
That's right. You know, but in order to be a rim protector, you have to be against social justice. That's the most effective form of rim protection.
Oh man,
that's why Dodd doesn't let him down.
That's right.
I'm picturing like an 80s style PSA where like Bogut's like, you might know me from protecting the rim, but I'm also keeping untoward ideas out of your head. I mean, that's his accent. I'm assuming it's not Australian. It's more like a Brooklyn, but I don't do Australian.
With like a really bulky leather jacket and a chain of some kind.
Oh yeah. Plain white t-shirt underneath. You've got my vibe.
Are there any Kerr Bochy similarities?
No.
Cause it seems like rotations / platoon splits that there's at least some crossover there.
Yeah, I just, you know, I think about Bochy as being very smart baseball wise and maybe personality wise on a one-to-one basis, whereas like Kerr, I want him to be the president. I just like Kerr as a huge, as just a person, just a thoughtful, interesting sort of mind. I kind of see them as being in two different spheres. I don't want to put Bochy down, don't get me wrong. I think his smarts impress me more from like a baseball standpoint. Maybe that's because I'm more X's and O's on baseball than basketball. But like Kerr, I just love unconditionally, and I, you know, want him to come over for dinner. I guess Bochy, well, too. That would be a lot of fun.
Kerr would have to be a president from bed because of his back, like 5 months out of every year.
Right.
Look, if Roosevelt could do it, Kerr could do
right.
it.
That's right.
Bed president on Netflix.
Bed president.
Greenline it. Screw it.
What's the thread count on these sheets? That show will happen. YouTube Red. All right, Doug. What else have we got?
Rob Hainer at Robert Hainer asked, who do you like for the fifth spot in the rotation? Kane, Block, Blackburn, Beattie, someone else?
Well, clearly, I think it's got
clearly Block right now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, are we being too judgy over like two well-timed starts at the end of the season? Or, I mean, because I look at what he did in Sacramento, and I just think he's, you know, he's got it. He's got the location. For some reason, I can't quite flesh this theory out, but I think the hyper strikeout league somehow is going to play into the low strikeout arms like Block. Like, I think there's some sort of way they can thrive even as the league is going more and more towards strikeouts, but I can't put my finger on it. So I'm just going to like say it in passing on a podcast.
Well, Suarez, I mean, I feel like Suarez still is worthy of consideration too. I mean, he didn't do anything to lose a spot, really.
He was just never that good. I mean, that's what he did. He didn't. Right. He didn't make them keep him.
That's a fair point. But I guess I could see why, you know, Block's utility is You know, he's good against the Dodgers, and I'm not saying that because he was good against the Dodgers, but I'm saying their best hitters are left-handed, save Justin Turner if he comes back. And I feel like that might weigh into it in some way, that the fifth spot might be maybe a little more matchup dependent, that they might try to use it that way, just because it really seemed like this past season they got really obsessed with the matchups, that it might extend to the starters.
I feel like it won't. My guess is that it's going to be more of a know your roles kind of thing, and that they would rather have that, especially for someone like Block, who it's already hard enough to succeed in the majors when you're just coming up. You don't want to put that on him too. That sometimes you'll be a starter, sometimes you won't. You'll just have to wait and see.
So you think they'll buck both trends? They'll buck the trend that they were on, and then they'll buck the trend of the sport, which the playoffs showed, like, you don't need a starter. Everyone pitches a third of an inning. Like, that's.
I mean, the thing about the World Series is that didn't really work. Like, those relievers gave up runs 7 games into a series where they had a lot of off days. So right.
Those guys
to say that's a good thing to do in the season is probably not going to happen.
Andrew Miller was so tired by the end of that. Like, it made me tired watching him. Watching him throw a slider after slider, like his, you know, he's probably sitting at home and his wife's like, is that your phone ringing? It's like, no, it's my elbow. But like, I just picture him. It's just that thing.
What do phones sound like to you, Grant?
It's like a tuning fork, you know, just right. Don't you have a tuning fork as your ringtone? Do people have ringtones? But he was so tight. So it was like, yes, you know, if the Indians win in 6 or win in 5, we're still talking about like a Super Bowl pen. And here's how you do it. You just work your best guy harder and harder than ever before. And it would have worked. And that would have been the new paradigm. But then you see what happens if it's stretched out just enough. And I think it would have happened to the Dodgers too. You know, you get them in the World Series, and by the end of it, you were just going to have, you know, essence of Clayton Kershaw, not the real thing. And you're just going to have like a gaseous form of Kenley Jansen and not the actual corporeal form that we were expecting. So I think
Ghastly Jansen.
Yeah. Oh man. Sitting right there. Go there. Oh man. So I think, you know, you can't just stretch out your guys and make, you know, everything that much thinner of a soup. And I think that was the real lesson of the postseason. It might've been lost on us if we didn't have a 7-game World Series.
Which, you know, haha. Cleveland blowing a 3-1 lead. Also, trying to figure out who made more mistakes in that World Series, it certainly felt like Joe Maddon did. And even though he won, I mean, it just seemed like...
No, it seemed like, especially because Francona's mistakes were sort of forced. Like, he didn't have his second and third best starters. Right. He had to sort of improvise and go wild with the bullpen and hope it worked. Joe Maddon did not have to do that. He just saw Terry Francona doing it. It was like, I just had an idea, my own idea that no one's ever had before.
So you're saying he's like the muse to Francona's Radiohead? Like he's he's trying to be edgy, and then you strip it away, and it's just sort of like arena rock at its core.
Muse is the perfect band comp for Joe Maddon. That is amazing. That is...
You know, he's just, don't get me wrong, I enjoy a good Muse song. I think there's a craft to it, but it's...
There's a talent to it. There's a sound. It sounds distinct enough, and you, yeah.
I'm not necessarily agog with the innovation part of it. I like Maddon well enough, but he did make some silly, silly moves, you know, especially with Chapman, just... You know, 5-run lead. Just, you know, we're gonna pitch you into the ground. Don't worry. Is there a game tomorrow? Game 7. Okay, whatever. Just keep pitching. Just, you know, we'll figure it out for game 7. What's gonna happen? Are you gonna blow it? Give up a home run to Rajay Davis? Like, that's gonna happen.
Right. Doug, you wrote a nice article about Rajay Davis. I think there's. I feel like it's immature of me to say that I had the what if Rajay Davis had stayed in the organization longer than he did. That question certainly eventually went away, but it was interesting to watch him playing in the playoffs going like, man, whatever. Why did they cut the cord with him so quickly? They seemingly have held on to other players of seemingly lesser talent for a lot longer. But
Alex Hinshaw is still in the 40-man. You can look it up.
Do you know who they cut Rajay Davis to make room for on the 40 man?
No.
Oh, I looked this up when I wrote the article, but I forgot.
It is Emmanuel Burris. The first time they called him up, it's like, well, we need to get this guy on the roster. Who's got to go? It's like,
the worst giant ever.
Let's get rid of a player who will literally play for another decade after this. Right.
I guess, but it goes back to, which I forgot to mention, you mentioned the batting average on balls in play for Joe Panik. Like, obviously the Giants, I think we know, we trust the Giants enough to know, like, they're seeing what you're seeing too, Grant. Like, they're like, nope, he's scorched the ball everywhere. If it weren't for DJ LeMahieu playing in every game somehow, he would be an all-star hitter. So, I don't think they're going to panic either. So I just go back to that. I'm like, there's something about him the Giants didn't like.
Right.
What they saw in Emmanuel. What I want to know is, so knowing that, I can accept that. But what I need to know is, what do they see in Emmanuel Burris and Ari Adrianza that just fueled that fire for so long?
I feel like the answer to that would just be Brian Sabian, like, looking at you and be like, sorry.
I don't think Brian Sabian's ever apologized in his life.
No, but he would for that.
He should. It's good. He gets to be ornery and not apologize for anything as long as he lives. You know,
I agree.
I've always been a big Brian Sabian fan on the website from the very beginning. And I just have to say, all you guys, now you see what I have seen the whole time.
Negative Nellies.
Just going to memory hole that. Those whole in 2009, I wasn't bitter about the offense or on-base percentage or nothing.
Oh, my God, the offense. Oh, my God. 2009 feels like a bigger missed opportunity than 2011. 2011 had a very serious injury that definitely, you know, sidelined, you know, it took the wind out of their sails. But 2009 was trending upwards, and then they kept killing themselves. Oh my God,
that season was maybe, yeah, I gotta compare them now. 2009, 2016, like have I done this before? It feels like I've compared even years before or odd years before. I don't know.
Yeah, I liked what you did during the World Series week, saying like this week in Giants, or this is what was happening on October 25th for the Giants, and we're ridiculously spoiled that we can go back and have all this data to pull up.
I mean, wait, it's just it was something I had to slap together because I was on the road, and like I had no time to actually put effort into a post, and so that was something I could just write off the top of my head. Like, what were we doing back then? Oh, look, it's, you know, Madison Bumgarner came in on a paraglider and defeated the Royals with his bare hands, or, you know, whatever happened. So pretty spoiled. And what do we do on this podcast? Talk about how much we hate the Giants in baseball.
Hate them so much.
Oh my God.
That's the best part of being spoiled, is I mean, totally just have no self-awareness. I love it.
That's the thing. We didn't hate the Giants because they didn't win the World Series this year. You put it out there. This is the team I've hated, the Giants team I've hated the most. I think you wrote that in August.
Yeah, it's not supposed to, you're not supposed to have that clear dichotomy of like, you know, we've secretly replaced this good Giants team with the worst of them in baseball. Let's see if they notice. And it's like, it's not supposed to work like that. You're not supposed to have regression that lasts an entire half. And it comes with the most frustrating thing a baseball team can shove in your face, which is a bad bullpen, because that is at the end of 3 hours and you're expecting, you've enjoyed good things and you've said, okay, we've got this one. And over again, more than any other team. And like, what were those stats? Like, they blew more saves than any team since like the 91 Mets. Just crazy stats. Like, it was the worst bullpen, and having a bad bullpen is the worst baseball experience. And so combined, that's why it was so easy to hate the Giants. Not really. Tongue in cheek hate them, sort of hate them. I mean, not tongue in cheek, really hate them.
Yeah, actually really hate them.
Yeah, but not in a lasting way. Just you don't hate your dog when it makes a mess and where it shouldn't make a mess. I mean, Mike, was that an analogy inappropriate? I don't know, but it's...
No, because they kind of did what dogs do, and they kind of won back your love fully with how they fought in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then they just wound up barfing it all up, like a dog would.
Okay, yeah.
What an amazing dog. It brought me the paper and the slip. Oh, it's throwing up everywhere. Everywhere. Everywhere there's puke now.
Oh, God. Yeah. Is that blood? It's rivers of bile and blood. It's not even regular dog puke.
I just want to add this to the World Series, though. It is amazing to me, you know, watching Giants games, I think, especially this year, they are kind of a painful slog in a lot of ways, just with the pitching changes and all that stuff. But what we see, at least what I see watching versus watching other teams, is I see control. I see someone who knows, who has an idea of what he wants to do, and the players are sort of, are more or less playing into what is expected of them. When I'm watching these other teams, I really feel like I'm watching, these are people improvising by the seat of their pants, and they really are more hoping it'll work than basing it on experiences of anything. In the playoffs, I feel like it was much more apparent than if I just watch a. I would never watch a Twins Tigers game during the regular season, but just to give you an idea of what that might be, you know, it's sort of like, I think that's, we're spoiled in a lot of ways. Even when the Giants are bad, it's like, okay, they're bad by their very specific process. When other teams are bad, they can be bad for who knows why. They have many ways of being bad and surprising and all that stuff. You know, Bruce Bochy goes to Hunter Strickland in this moment because he knows that he can't use this guy, or he wants to see if he can get Strickland through this inning because he wants to use this guy for two innings. Whereas, like you said, it's with Madden, it's like, I have a 5-run lead, and I remember when I was in the World Series last time, my team blew a 5-run lead. It can't happen again. If we blow it now, we won't have a Game 7. I'm going to put in my best reliever.
Right.
And that's it. It's not like, what about tomorrow? I might need Chapman tomorrow, which is as important as today. I've got a 4-run lead. Maybe I should try to mix it in with a fresh arm here so I don't have to use Chapman for as long if I need to. So I don't know. We're very lucky. We're very spoiled. And we hate the Giants.
I'm like excited, and I look at this roster and I think about what needs to be done in the offseason, where it's like, you know, get a reliever, get maybe an outfielder or a fifth starter, I don't know, you've got options. And I love this, I like the way this lineup looks, and I'm looking at these names, these same names that just rankled me, you know, like, yeah, I think Span might bounce back, and Panic I think was unlucky, and like, you go through the whole roster and am I like being naive? Am I being stupid? Am I being too much of a fanboy? Like, I'm optimistic again because of those good bones, like you were talking about.
I think my only real concern for the roster is that Hunter Pence really does need to be like a 20-25 home run guy, and I don't think Hunter Pence can play an entire season anymore. And so that worries me in terms of sunk cost and position and. So I don't know. I mean, if the Giants boost their bench, maybe, if that becomes sort of, you know, because that's always been sort of the last few off seasons, it's been sort of a last minute fix it. And then we get to situations like this year where, despite having Grant Green and Ramiro Pena kind of filling in capably, then all those guys got hurt. There was really nothing sort of left, and Connor Gillespie was the only good guy off the bench, and then he wound up being their offense essentially in the postseason.
I'll throw a bone to Kelby Tomlinson. You know, him being hurt more than I would have expected, and then him sort of being memory hold in Fresno or Sacramento because of roster concerns. You know, and then he came back and he was okay. Like, I think Tomlinson can be okay, and I think. Okay is what you should really hope for off a bench.
I like your Trumbo idea, though, just because it's a big question. We know what won't work about it, but yeah. What would work about it.
I know why it's stupid, and I still just, well, I don't know. Maybe the dingers will, you know, maybe just in that specific permutation, like, that's the difference between the Giants underperforming their Pythagorean record every year, and all of a sudden it's like, I don't know why, but they're performing better than their Pythagorean record. It's just like sprinkling those dingers around at just the right times might be the secret key. But
by accident, he'll hit 30 home runs, which would be the first Giants hitter to hit 30 home runs in what, 10 years, 11 years?
Since Bonds, yeah.
So just by accident. That's got to count for something. Now, Doug, are we out of questions?
We have One more. It's will the Giants sign Daniel Nava and Brad Ziegler before or after Christmas?
What a perfect question to end on.
Exactly.
Whose question is that? Was it 36 day?
That is from Steve Svensson at SSvensson19.
Oh man,
that's a perfect Giants pairing.
It is a very Giants Christmas, is what that would be. I mean, Brad Ziegler just seems to me, because there are some big, scary, big money teams looking for premium closers, and so you've got the Dodgers, the Cubs, and the Yankees all looking for like a big closer guy. And if those big closer guys don't necessarily want to come to the Giants for whatever reason, the Giants are going to have to look for a different option. And so that would be Brad Ziegler. And that's just a very Giants closer. I guess because it's been the last power closer we've had was Wilson. And so it just seems like Casillas more location than stuff. And, you know, certainly Romo was more, you know, getting people to swing and miss at the junk. So I can see Ziegler. It just fits, even if it would be a little disappointing.
It would play into your idea that the higher strikeout league would actually help the non-strikeout pitchers, though. So there's that. I think Daniel Nava would be perfect. He's a switch hitter, right? So he blocks Williamson and Parker. And I think that's perfect. So
he's a local kid too. He's Redwood City, Mountain View, something like that.
Oh yeah,
looking up his he had a 65 OPS plus last year. Is that good?
Yeah. Anything over 0.5 is great. Also,
now with the Royals, it was -7. So when you get to negative, it's looped back around to being good, right?
All you have to do is add it to is subtract a negative from it, and it becomes a positive.
Yeah, where you multiply it by itself, and it's really positive.
That's right.
So I don't see a problem with that.
Man, he'll be 34 next year. This is the perfect Giants signing. My goodness.
All right,
although Bobby Evans has sort of not followed the pattern we expect. He has not really done the Brian Sabian moves.
And I think he's a lot more autonomous than I thought he would have been. I thought he was just going to be an extension of the Brian Sabian era, but it feels like he's bringing his own thoughts, his own rubber stamp to the table in a way I wasn't expecting. When the move happened, it seemed like it was almost ceremonial, like, oh, Sabian's just going to take a step back from the visibility part. But I think Evans is his own kind of beast, and it's interesting to watch.
Not too surprising, because Evan's been there to like 22 years himself, so yeah, but which I think I always forget that. It's like, oh, he's been there for a very long time, too.
But that's why I thought he was going to be more like an extension of the Sabian era, insofar like I just thought he was going to, like, I figured they were finishing each other's sentences already. Like, I just thought it was one of those things. But no, he's his own cat with his own ideas.
All right, so we've done this. This is our 46th podcast when it goes up. I think it's our 42nd like official episode. We've had some special editions or extra stuff that I just turned into another thing. And you know, I like to look back and get sort of like a performance review of things. I always fail them. So I'm not expecting anything different here. But Grant, since we have you on the show now, I guess my question is were we amazing or just fantastic?
Ooh, that's awkward, because I got to be honest with you. I don't think this can go on much longer. I think you had your shot.
I mean, we had some good episodes though, right?
Yeah. I mean, the bad
besides part, the ones with you in it.
No, I was gonna say the bad part is that you had to get me on to kind of lift up the tenor of the site. I mean, I had one with the, I heard one with that Ruben guy. He was okay. He was okay. Like when you were just riffing, just you and him. I mean, it's like I felt like there was a chemistry there that you don't normally have on the McCovey Chronicles Croncast. So
not talking about baseball.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was taking that as so when I wasn't there.
Yeah, I guess if you had to like a thread of commonality, I guess you weren't there for a lot of those types. That's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no. So more Ruben, less me and Doug is what I'm hearing.
You know what? I think a good contrast would be Ruben, and Roger.
And Roger.
Like those two guys playing off each other. I mean, and, you know, and Jen McRamos is great. So maybe get her and Ruben with like Roger's like a sideline commentator kind of thing. They would just swoop in with prospect news.
They're talking about, oh, my car broke down. And whoosh. Did you hear?
I think it could work a lot of different ways other than this specific format, which is clearly dead and didn't really work.
So we're done is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I don't see there's any future in it really, like a podcast. Anyone even listen?
Well, I mean, kind of step up and say what you're saying. Let's talk about what you're talking about.
All right, I gotta let you go. Specifically, Brian, I gotta cut the cord here and just you know, take it and I mean, honestly, did you see the stats for this podcast? Like, the kids aren't listening.
I mean, we put all those Cialis ads in, and that didn't boost the listenership at all.
I mean, we yelled separate bathtubs so people would know what was going on.
No, that's the thing with radio ads and Cialis. Like, there's no visual representations of boners. So, like, you're relying on just voice alone, and that you can't make a boner pill ad with just your voice, because there's no like big thick branches in the background outside the window, or, you know, canoes being carried from one place to another.
But I thought that boing sound effect was gonna sell the idea.
It was a little too shock jock, a little too shock jock.
So then this is it, and we're done, and I'm gonna give my. I just want to let you know I'm gonna give myself a Hunger Games style send off on the internet with my picture and the fireworks. Then, if that's what's happening here, because I feel like Doug and I put a lot of our spare time into this, and we gave it 25% of our all.
We gave it 25% of the time, like half the time.
That's right, and you know. I think at the end of it, we started as amateurs, and I think we ended as amateurs. But, you know, I think we learned a lot.
I mean, Doug was on KQED.
Oh, wait. I think I started as an amateur, and I ended as gutter trash. I'm sorry. To be clear. That's right. You guys were on public, and you were on there before it disappeared, so that's even more historic.
Yeah.
Before that all goes away. So, well, thanks. Thanks for being on the show and for putting up with us, I guess.
No, I honestly thought it was a tremendous season from you guys. And I'm tickled that you guys had the idea to come up with a podcast and that it was so good. I listened to you guys on airplanes and stuff, and I would like titter to myself on an airplane. And that I don't titter easily on airplanes.
Well, you just have to sign up for the web access and get it. Oh, wait, titter. All right. Okay. Well, thanks for coming on the show. Yeah, exactly. Thanks for coming on the show so often. and for having such a great site that people in Los Angeles know about, and people all over the place know about. So I think that's pretty cool. That's got to be cool, right? You started this site as like a Brian Sabian fan appreciation site, and it's turned into this whole thing.
Yeah, it's, you know, it was just basically to be a rah-rah organizational fanboy thing, and it still is, you know, all these years later, except more people have read it and heard of it, so good job, me.
That's right. Cody Ransom has a place of honor now because of your writing, so.
Oh, boy.
Oh, I just thought of Cody Ransom. What a terrible way to end. Doug, we're signing off, so do you have any last words or thoughts or grievances to air?
I'm sorry. I'm just really sorry.
Yeah. This is like the cause of cancer, the kids in the hall. Yeah.
Sorry I caused all that cancer.
It's okay. My marrow's just low. So. That was from Brain Candy. All right, so we'll end with stealing someone else's line. And no, but we appreciate everyone who listened and told us about how poorly our audio was and submitted questions, great questions. The whole season we got really good questions and ideas for games. And everyone who came on the show, as I said, Grant, to goose our ratings every time. But also we've had Wendy Thurm. We've had Mike Farron from the Arizona Diamondbacks. We've had Brian Srabian from the Giants. We've had Jen Mac Ramos. We've had Roger Munter. Thanks so much for helping us out with the minor leagues and letting us know that there is hope going forward, that there is hope. The Giants can develop hitters now. I'm missing other guests. I know it for sure. But we appreciate everyone who's been on the show, who's listened. Our listenership's gone up every single time we've released. It's been really great to see. And thank you to SB Nation for letting us do this, too. Thanks again. And we won't be back because Grant ended it. And enjoy the off-season.
We'll leave it open. Well, you know, come back to me in the spring and see if you still got a fever for this kid.
All right. Well, if Daniel Nava's there, I mean, we got to talk about that. So. All right. Thanks. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you.